Welcome to the Life Series Online.
Hey.
Tim, why are we doing this? What is Life Online?
Yeah, look, normally we run what's called the Life Series in a house as a kind of 5 week, 6 week thing, depends sometimes. But essentially, it's an opportunity for people to wrestle with, to reflect on what they think about life, as the name suggests. But more importantly, what they think about life, God, the big questions, who is Jesus? What does the Bible have to say about life? And, you know, I believe, and we believe here at Village, that people are wrestling with these things. Across our whole community, people want to know, what is the truth? Why are we here? What are we doing? What does spirituality look like? Is there a God? And how do I engage with him? And that's what we're on about at Village. We want to help people wrestle with those questions. We believe in something called the gospel, which is the good news about Jesus, which, you know, we're going to be unpacking over kind of the next bunch of sessions.
Yeah. So how is this going to work?
So each week we're kind of going to have a topic for discussion, essentially. If you're watching alone, it'll be an opportunity to think and reflect for yourself, listen to some stuff that I'm going to say from the Bible about Jesus. Consider that. If you're watching with others, it'll be an opportunity to hear what the Bible has to say, but then to discuss with them what that is. So we'll kick off with a little discussion question, but then after that, I'll do a talk or a presentation, walk us through the gospel message of the Bible, and then at the end, give you another opportunity to reflect and consider what you've heard. And as well to be able to send in questions by text that we'll answer in the next session or week, however you want to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for today, our topic is going to be about the good life, right?
Yeah. So we'll get into it.
Let's get into it.
Mm. Well, we call this series Life because all of us are chasing the good life. And Jesus made some massive claims about the good life, a life that knows and appreciates joy and beauty, a life that has real hope. In the face of hardship and suffering, a life of love and peace and contentment. He doesn't say, hey, if you need a few tips to make life better, he doesn't say, let me be your life coach. He boldly claims to be central to the good life. So I want to consider how a Palestinian man of 2,000 years ago is relevant to your deepest desires today. To get us there, I need to begin by getting us to think about something that on the surface isn't that sexy or exciting. I want us to think about truth, because Jesus said the truth will set you free. Here's something to help us begin to think about truth. Have a look at this video.
So if I told you that I was a woman, what would your response be?
Good for you. Okay. Like, yeah.
Nice to meet you.
I'd be like, what? Really?
I don't have a problem with it.
I'd ask you how you came to that conclusion.
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would your response be?
I mean, I might be a little surprised, but I would say, good for you. Like, yeah, be who you are.
I would maybe think you had some Chinese ancestor.
I would ask you how you similarly came to that conclusion and why you came to that conclusion.
I would have a lot of questions, just because on the outside I would assume that you're a white man.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would your response be?
I wouldn't believe that immediately.
I probably wouldn't believe it, but I mean, it wouldn't really bother me that much to go out of my way and tell you, no, you're wrong. I'd just be like, oh, okay, he wants to say he's 7 years old.
If you feel seven at heart, then then so be it. Yeah, good for you.
So if I wanted to enroll in a first grade class, do you think I should be allowed to?
Probably not, I guess. I mean, unless you haven't completed first grade up to this point and for some reason need to do that now.
If that's where you feel like mentally you should be, then I feel like there are communities that would accept you for that.
I would say so long as you're not hindering society and you're not causing harm to other people, I feel like that should be an okay thing.
If I told you I'm 6 feet, 5 inches, what would you say?
That I would question.
Why?
Because you're not. No, I don't think you're 6'5".
If you truly believed you're 6'5", I don't think it's harmful. I think it's fine if you believe that. It doesn't matter to me if you think you're taller than you are.
So you'd be willing to tell me I'm wrong?
I wouldn't tell you you're wrong.
No, but I say that I don't think that you are.
I feel like that's not my place as like another human to say someone is wrong or to draw lines or boundaries.
No, I mean, I wouldn't just go like, oh, you're wrong. Like, that's wrong to believe in it. Because, I mean, again, it doesn't really bother me what you want to think about your height or anything.
So I can be a Chinese woman.
You... sure.
But I can't be a 6'5" Chinese woman.
Yes.
If you thoroughly debated me or explained why you felt that you were 6'5", I feel like I would be very open to saying that you are 6'5", or Chinese, or a woman.
Well, I wonder what you think about that. Is it true that the truth about who you are is whatever you want it to be? Culturally speaking, I reckon we say things like this: it's your truth, it's my truth. But is that how truth works? And think about the implications of that. Is it the case then that because we want to be able to, or we do define the truth about ourselves, that we can then decide what is true about the biggest questions in life? Questions like, where did I come from? Who are we? Why am I here? How should I live? Where is my life going? Do you ever think about questions like that? It might be a rare moment when you're staring up into the sky, wondering where little old me fits into this vast universe. Or maybe you were jolted into reflection on these questions by a painful or powerful moment in your life. But this is where the truth really matters, doesn't it? Are the answers to the big questions in life just whatever you feel, whatever you like best? Are they even whatever makes most sense to you or whatever's most popular at the moment? Is it possible that there are only true answers because truth doesn't simply bend to your preferences and feelings? When you see a doctor, are you happy for her to say, look, I know you've got all these symptoms that point to the flu, but actually, I just feel like you're going through menopause right now? No, you want a doctor who's going to give you a diagnosis that is true, that most accords with the evidence. You want a fact-based approach to medicine, not an approach based on your own perceptions of reality. If a person steps off the roof of a house, no matter the time in history, no matter their cultural background or beliefs, no matter how sincerely they believe they will float, it is always going to be true that they will go splat. Isn't that right? Gravity isn't like Roadrunner. You remember that cartoon where he only starts to fall once he looks down. The reality of gravity is absolutely true all the time for all people. And do you remember who came up with the law of gravity? Isaac Newton, right? When it comes to stuff like that, we don't call them inventions. We call it a discovery. Newton didn't invent the truth about gravity. He discovered it. And could it be that that's the same with the answers of life? That you don't invent them, but you need to discover them. And I reckon we all agree that truth is actually important for the big things in life, for realities like gravity and medicine. So why are we willing to change the rules when it comes to something, it comes to these bigger questions? Why do we say stuff like that? Well, that religion might be true for you or that person, but not for me. Why do we think that the good life is whatever you want to make it? Is it not possible that the big questions in life have only one right and true answer? And if so, wouldn't you want to search for it? Wouldn't you want to discover that truth? And this is where Jesus comes in. He says that just like gravity is true for all people, there's only one true answer as to what the good life is. One truth about deep, satisfying, lasting happiness. Jesus says it's actually about true worship. Now, you might hear that word and you might think worship, that's just something for religious people. But according to Jesus, actually, there's no such thing as non-worship. We all have something that we worship, a functional god or gods. We are all worshippers because Jesus understands worship as being whatever you put your hope in or whatever you revere and delight in or whatever you build your life around. Jesus is saying it's not about whether you do or don't worship. It's about who or what you will worship. And can that object of your worship, can the thing that you've built your life around, can that actually satisfy your deepest desires in life? Can that give you what we all hope and long for? Much of the worship we see in our community is of things like money, sex, power, popularity, possessions. Sometimes it's things that don't sound as bad as all that. Sometimes it's family. Sometimes it's just relaxation. But these things seem like great paths to what we would call the good life. But when you look at it, when you dig down into it, what it also seems is that these things tend to disappoint and they don't actually fulfill our deepest desires. But instead of acknowledging this, we're like gamblers who double down every time. We're suckers over and over to the deceptive and enslaving lie that simply more of that thing will be the answer. You know, money would satisfy me if I just had enough of it. Sex is disappointing because I'm not getting enough of it. The truth is, though, that these things, no matter how much you get of them, will actually always disappoint you ultimately. Jesus says that what we worship determines where we find our identity. But here's the thing, when we seek our identity by worshiping the wrong things, they actually eat us alive. Let me show you this in real life. You might know people, you might have been this person yourself, who worships body and beauty. But when you do that, the result is usually that you always feel ugly and vulnerable. Because there's always going to be someone who's more beautiful than you. And time always wins in the beauty game. Studies have found that women check out other women far more than they do men. What are they wearing? How much cellulite do they have? Studies also find that women check themselves out in a reflection 8 times a day. Now, some of you are thinking, I wish it was just 8 times a day. Mirrors, cars, shop windows, phones, whatever it might be. But 94% of women will say that they don't like what they see. You see, you put your sense of identity, you'll put your worship into body and body image, and it crushes you. Every time you see yourself in a mirror, it's crushing you. That's just one example. Let me give you another. If you worship being a popular person, being a well-liked person, then you're at the mercy of everyone's opinion of you. Do they like your Instagram pic? So many of us getting validation from a little thumb. If you worship money and things like money, you find that you never have enough. And actually, the more you have, the more you realize what you can't get with money and what you don't have. And so our culture finds itself faced with this kind of odd equation. We are the most prosperous people of all time. And yet unhappiness is spiking. Loneliness is spiking. With the greatest prosperity has come the greatest unhappiness. So what we worship, it determines our identity, and our false worship only disappoints and actually harms us. Yeah, this has modern features to it, but it's not just a modern problem. A man who lived 3,000 years ago had everything. This is a man who said he had 700 wives, 300 girls on the side. He was wealthy. He was powerful. He was sought out. But listen to what he says. He says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. A man with all the wisdom, all the wealth, all the sex, all the success, all the power, all the pleasure. And he says it was meaningless. It was chasing after the wind. What about a more recent experience? Listen to Jim Carrey, and this time he's not making a joke. This brings us to the issue of God. Bound up in our desire to be happy is that we want our lives to matter, to have significance, purpose, and meaning. But have you ever asked yourself why our lives should matter? Many in our community believe only in a material world, that we're the product of random chance, accidents who found ourselves lucky to just be here. We live, we die, we rot, we're gone. Our DNA neither cares nor knows, DNA just is, and we dance to its music, Richard Dawkins says. But if that's true, then why should our lives have meaning at all? If there is no purposeful and personal creator to give us meaning, a purpose in life, if DNA just is, then it's simple. We're alone in the universe. We're an advanced species that needs food and water and sex, and your life is utterly meaningless. But is that right? Is that what your gut tells you? Is that what your life tells you? What if there actually is more to life than that? You see, everything within us wants there to be. And the good news in Jesus is that he says there is. Which brings me to the question, what does Jesus have to do with the truly good and meaningful life? Well, Jesus makes this massive claim. He claims to be the only one who can offer the good life that we actually desire. He claims to be the only one that we can worship and not be crushed by our worship of him, but instead be fulfilled by our worship of him. He says the pursuit of true happiness without God is going to be tiring, frustrating, and ultimately hopeless. And I don't know if you're experiencing that right now, but if you can imagine, what if there is a creator? And what if he is good and kind and intends for us real life, satisfying and full life? Jesus's point in the Bible is very simple. It's that if you're cut off from the life-giving God, the God who made you and made you to have life in him, then it doesn't matter what you try and fill the gap with. It will never work because you're trying to replace something that is irreplaceable. You're trying to replace true worship with false worship. It's like trying to eat cardboard. You might feel thin for a little while. You might feel full for a little while, but ultimately it will never satisfy your hunger. You're like a flower in a vase that's disconnected from its life source. Might look pretty for a moment, but after a while, you'll realize that actually you're dying. I want to show you some of Jesus' words for yourself in the Bible. This is in John 10. It'll come up on the screen. Jesus is speaking to a crowd of people. He's using a figure of speech when he compares people to sheep. Sheep are one of those animals that if you leave them to their own devices, they often end up in silly or even bad places. But with help, with the direction of a good shepherd, they can find contentment in green pastures. And you see what Jesus says. He says, therefore, very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Life to the full. The good life. Life with meaning, purpose, and significance. Here's the first thing to notice about this life. The good life can begin right now, but it goes on into eternity. Jesus says later in verse 27, he says, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. Eternal life means a lot of things, but it can be summed up as life as God intended it to be. Life that goes beyond the pain and brokenness of just this life. A good life that begins now because you're connected to God, but goes on into eternity. That's the first thing. But here's the second thing to notice about this life. Jesus makes himself the key to gaining it. You notice what he said in sentence 9. He says, I am the gate for the sheep. He's saying, I am the way into the pasture. I am the way into the good life forever. You notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't say, look, I'm one of the ways. You could go this way or that way or me. He doesn't say that. He says, I am the way to life. Later in John's gospel, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to God the Father except through me. Jesus is the only way to being back in life with God, that true life and that eternal life. That's a big call. It's a confronting one for our time. But what if it's true? Jesus is doing something here. He is putting himself in a category totally unique among spiritual leaders. Buddha claimed to teach the way to enlightenment, but you got to go and find it. Muhammad claimed to be a prophet from God, but Jesus's claim is that it's him. He is the truth and the life itself. That he is the only one that has the power of God to give true life to whoever he chooses. It's why he's been called the man that you can't ignore. And I would suggest to you that if you want to retain any intellectual credibility in this life, you've got to have a wrestle with who Jesus is. A famous author, C.S. Lewis, once put it like this, a man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He'd either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he's a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make a choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God who he claimed to be, or else he's some sort of madman or something else. Let me pull this all together for us. Truth matters. It matters in physics, matters in medicine. We can't function as a society unless the signs we put up tell the truth. Unless the justice systems and courtrooms are concerned for truth, our relationships don't work unless they're based on truth. Jesus claims to have the truth about the good life, and he says it's to be in relationship with him, by worshiping him, by centering your life around him. That's the only way to finding pleasure, happiness, meaning that goes on from this life into eternity. Now, how does he do that? How is that possible? Well, we'll look in that into more detail over the next few weeks. But you get a hint of it in sentence 11 of John. It's this amazing paradox. It's that it's going to take the death of the good shepherd, of Jesus, for us to have life. That's a little taste of what's to come. But friends, these are massive claims that deal with life and death issues. Too big to just ignore, too significant to dismiss. You got to do something about Jesus. If he's not telling the truth, then he's not a good man. He's an evil man. You should ignore him completely. But if he is telling the truth, then that means big things for you and your life. Let me leave you with a question to wrestle with. What do you think about Jesus? What do you believe about him? And are you open to the idea that he might have a true answer to the biggest question? What is life all about? How do I find the truly good life? What do you think about that? If you're by yourself, take some time to think, to reflect on this. What do you believe? What do you think about Jesus? If you're with someone else, why don't you have a discussion with them? We're going to give you 5 minutes on the clock, but if you need longer, you can just pause, and then we're going to come back and Lila and I will kind of close us off. Thank you.
Okay, so Jesus is the key to the good life, the life that we're all looking for. What if that's the truth?
Yeah, that's right. And that's kind of the offer of the gospel, I guess. We haven't really gotten to how you can receive that life yet. That'll come. But this is where we start. It feels like an offer too good to be true in some senses. So people often dismiss it. Surely that couldn't be right. But what if it is? What if it is true?
Yeah, what if it is? But maybe you have questions about this Jesus. Why don't you send them in? We're going to put the phone number here where you can send in your questions, and then each week we'll answer them.
Yeah, the following week. So we aren't recording this live. But if you send in your text now, I'll answer that next week. Or if we get lots of texts and questions, what we'll do is we'll answer one or two of them in the Life Series video, but then we'll also send a bunch over to our Living Grounded podcast that we do each week.
Yes. But how about we start with one question for today? Tim, how did you come to believe in the truth about Jesus?
Yeah, look, I didn't grow up in a Christian family or anything. In fact, I would have called myself an atheist, I think, as a teenager. But I walked into a church in my kind of mid-teens. Mm-hmm. I really liked youth group. I liked the vibe. I liked the community. And I just kind of liked staying in church. It felt like a really nice environment. People were, you know, yeah, there was something different about these people. But I also don't know that I really believed. I think I just liked the community. Mm-hmm. Eventually I got into my 20s and, you know, my life didn't look very Christian. And I knew it. I knew that I was going to church on a Sunday, but I was just living this really hypocritical lifestyle. And that led me to kind of ask the question, like, what am I doing? Do I actually believe this stuff? It's kind of the question that we've asked today. Is this actually true?
Is this the good life?
Yeah. Is this, do I believe that Jesus is who he says he is or not? And so that led me down kind of a path of, you know, to be honest, like a couple of years of wrestling with the Bible, of reading a lot, my background's in history. I wanted to know, is this true? Mm-hmm. Is this historically verifiable? Can I have any confidence in this? I came to a place where as I read the gospel accounts of Jesus, as I wrestled with the history of it, I became convinced that Jesus is who he says he is, that Jesus actually did die on a cross, rise from the dead, and that everything that he announced that he could do is save me from my sins and offer me eternal life. He actually could do that. And so ever since then, that's essentially changed my life. I live still hypocritically in many ways, but in other ways, not so much, because I think I truly do believe.
Mm. Well, that's it for today. Send in your questions. We'll post and send out session 2 of the Village Life Series next week. So keep an eye out for that. Get together again if you do it with other people. And if you would like to let us know that you're watching or to find out more about Jesus or Village, you can use this QR code right here to get in touch with us. And we would love to hear from you. And if you want answers to your questions even faster, you can always check out our Living Grounded podcast on Spotify and YouTube. We've already answered a bunch of questions over there. And currently we're walking through the highlights of the Bible together. So check that out. And otherwise, see you next session.
See you next session. Yep. Yeah.